She's only 18, don't like the Rolling Stone. She took a shortcut to being fully grown. She got that moon ring, her little sister Rose, a smell of Springsteen, a pair of pantyhose. This talking picture show is leaking from a silhouette. She said, my man, you know it's time to get your fingers wet. You're hustle busted when you can't afford a cigarette. The last I heard from you were you screaming,
Tonight's episode of Smack Talk Radio Live is dedicated to the life of the Macho Man, Randy Savage.
Listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, your source for news, views, and opinions on everything wrestling, from the big leagues to the local scene. Now, here's James McDonald and Corey Callahan.
Yes, it's a sad, sad week in the world of wrestling. Yet another legend taken by tragedy far before his time. Hello there, my name is James McDonald, and you're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live. We are broadcasting to you from beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia, and as always, I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Corey Callahan. Corey, initial thoughts on the Macho Man?
Definitely will be sadly missed. When I think of my time of when I was the biggest wrestling fan, I think of the era of the Macho Man.
Yes, yes.
Him and Hogan, him and Steamboat,
yes.
Savage, and Jake the Snake, him and Avalanche in the later WCW days. The list goes on. A true talent in the ring, and Savage had that ability to bring it to the next level and have the crowd in the palm of his hand every inch along the way.
He'll certainly be missed. Well, we have yet another great show for you tonight. We're going to go over this past Monday Night Raw in the tail of the tape. And like always, we have our weekly tradition, something we like to call tonight's Top 5.
It's been an interesting week in the business side of things, and we'll help you get all caught up in our post-to-post report, with some interesting announcements coming out from TNA this week.
Also on tonight's show, we're going to have an interview with independent wrestler The Architect, Mark Anthony. We'll also preview the busy month of June for the ECCW, as well as catching you up with what's happening with all the promotions in and around the Vancouver area in the local wrestling scene. And of course, buddy, don't forget about the poll question.
As always, you can check out www.smacktalkradiolive.com or join in on facebook.com/smacktalkradio.
Right now, though, let's kick things off. The tail of the tape.
I've been in these matches, and I've gone the distance. Right now I look in your eyes and you're wondering, how bad and over the limit will I get hurt? Or you're wondering, maybe, just maybe, I'll say I quit before I get hurt. And I can see in your eyes that you're so, so very scared, because after over the limit, you won't be saying I'm the Miz and I'm awesome. You'll be saying I'm the Miz and I quit.
It's time for the Tale of the Tape.
Well, everyone, this week's Monday Night Raw, which is actually the go-home show to the Over the Limit pay-per-view happening this Sunday, came to us from San Antonio, Texas. And as the show kicked off, we hear Cena's music hit, and he makes his way down to the ring to somewhat of a mixed crowd reaction. But before he can even say anything, though, he is interrupted by Alex Riley, a SmackDown superstar, by the way, who basically tells him that he's seen it all before. We then cut to an impressive video package, which WWE always puts together, of when Miz was the champion and was basically laying a weekly beating on Cena leading up to their match at WrestleMania. Riley then does an introduction for the Miz, and they make their way to the ring, much to the pleasure of Michael Cole.
Yeah, I gotta say here, James, I was really impressed with Alex Riley starting the show, taking the reins, grabbing the microphone. I thought he did an excellent job. You know, I am a huge fan of Alex Riley. I think he has all four, as we've discussed, you know, in shows past. I think they should push this guy to the moon. I don't know why they're holding him back, but this Monday was the start of something new,
I think. Yeah, I agree with you. Alex Riley definitely deserves more TV time.
Riley then says everyone always underestimated The Miz and gets some good crowd heat for mentioning the Spurs choking in the NBA playoffs. You know, the crowd chants, "You suck," which was pretty good, I might add. I mean, he was getting very good heat, James. Riley actually tells the crowd that The Miz will prove everyone wrong once again, because he will never utter the words, "I quit," of course referencing their I Quit match this Sunday at Over the Limit.
Yeah, it's should be a good one. But Cena then tells Riley he's as stupid as he is useless, which I thought was really good. And then he goes into some stupid, you know, little comedy thing that he likes to do about the Jonas Brothers, My Little Pony, and interestingly enough here, testicles.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice of word from Cena, because, you know, it's no secret that Cena is catering to the
children,
you know, the less intelligent audience. Yeah. And it works for him. It doesn't work for other wrestlers, but it definitely works for him. I'm a little surprised that he used the word testicles, but whatever, that's his choice. Cena then goes on to tell The Miz that he respects him from going from the laughingstock of the company to the champion, and that he picked an I Quit match because he still sees fear in his eyes, the same fear he sees right now as he stared at The Miz face to face.
Yeah. We then hear the familiar iPhone chime of the Raw general manager, which, you know, means he's got another useless message for us, and Michael Cole then tells him that since he allowed John Cena to pick the stipulation for the pay-per-view, he's going to allow The Miz to pick Cena's match and opponent tonight.
Well, they need something heading into this pay-per-view.
They got to build it up somehow.
They don't have any great heat. I mean, yes, these two did have a match at WrestleMania, but that heat has faded off. They do need something to kickstart this match for Sunday, and you knew it was going to be built at the last minute, and this is the route they went.
Yeah, Miz then contemplates it for a second, tells Cena that he doesn't know who he'll be facing or what kind of match it is, but he guarantees it will be awesome.
We then return from commercials with a highlight package of Big Show attacking CM Punk at ringside during last week's Kane versus Mason Ryan match, and this actually sort of led up to our first match, Kofi Kingston versus CM Punk with the new Nexus in a non-title match.
Yeah, a good match by both competitors, I'd say, with crisp maneuvers and good spots. Nexus at one point did try to interfere, but they were sent away by Punk. The end spot, though, featured a top rope crossbody followed by a near fall. Kofi then hit the boom drop, and he went to set up for the Trouble in Paradise, but Punk ended up ducking it. Punk then grabs Kofi, tries to set him up for the GTS. Kofi counters with like a roll-up, which was a near fall. Kofi then, this was the end spot there. He leaps into the corner but misses, hits the corner. Punk hits him with the GTS, gets the 1-2-3 on him.
Punk, after the match, says that was leadership by example. He then goes on to say there's no more Mr. Nice Punk. I thought that's what we had already seen. Yeah. And he's going to do things his way to ensure that the Nexus becomes the most dominant force the WWE Universe has ever seen.
Now, okay, here's my issue with this whole thing. is once again they're disgracing their secondary belts. You got Kofi Kingston, the U.S. title, coming out and losing cleanly to CM Punk. So wouldn't you think CM Punk should be the U.S. title holder now?
I'm never a fan of these non-title matches, and I'm definitely not a fan of using Kofi Kingston to put over, you know, the new Nexus. My biggest issue with this match, James, is have we not seen this already? The new Nexus attempting to become the dominant force? We saw that with John Cena heading into SummerSlam. It failed. You brought in the new Nexus, and Randy Orton demolished them one by one by one heading into WrestleMania. I don't need to see the new Nexus try to dominate for a third time.
No, I don't. You know, I agree with you there. One thing I think they should do, they should try maybe amalgamating the Nexus and the Core into like a super group or something.
I would actually like to see those two groups go against each other. I don't know why they have decided not to do that, but to me, that is not something that should have ended in one night. That is something that should have gone on for weeks upon weeks, possibly leading into an excellent 4-on-4 match
or
something with CM Punk and you know, Wade Barrett. That would have been a great storyline. I don't know why they didn't run with that.
They could have done something way better there. But
we then cut backstage with Vicky Guerrero and Dolph Ziggler in the back talking to The Miz, presumably about a match with John Cena later on that night. We actually see these vignettes throughout the night of Miz, you know, talking to different people. I'm guessing trying to coerce them into facing John Cena later on. I don't know about you, James, but I still can't get over how bad this new look is for Dolph Ziggler. I am not a fan of it.
Jeez, somebody sure dropped the ball on that one.
I have to do a double take every time I actually see him.
And I mean, that's not what you want, you know?
I think I've actually read somewhere that Dolph Ziggler isn't happy with his look either.
I wouldn't be.
You got to wait a little while before you go back, though. It's not a, you know, you can't just change yourself overnight. Although he did, but it's hard to go back to that old look just overnight.
The long blonde hair.
I think he will eventually. I think he realizes that it might have been a mistake. It just puts him in the average of everyone else. He doesn't stand out.
You know,
he just looks like everyone else now.
Which is sad, because I honestly think he's one of the more solid guys that they have on the roster. And they really should be.
Oh, I agree.
He should be up more than where he is.
I thought he was at world title potential at the height of him and Vicky, you know, competing there recently. I'm very surprised that they just shut it all down and brought him down to the mid-card level. I thought he was on the verge of superstardom.
You know, the saddest part about this whole thing is that this is all we see of Dolph Ziggler on Raw tonight.
That's
how bad is that?
Good point.
You know?
And when we return from commercial break, it's a slam of the week showing Karma destroying Eve Torres from last week's Raw. This leads us into our Divas match, which is Kelly Kelly versus Brie Bella with Nikki Bella outside in a non-title match. You know, it's a usual Divas fest with Brie working the arm, Kelly Kelly eventually getting the win with a botched roll-up. Not that great.
No.
After the match, the Bellas attack Kelly Kelly, hitting the X-Factor, and then take a guess at what happens here next, James.
Karma's music hits?
And yes. And lo and behold, all the Divas are standing frozen in fear. Karma then comes down to the ring and destroys the Bellas, crazy enough to attack her, and then moves over and surprisingly flicks Kelly Kelly in the head before leaving. I think the audience here thought that she was going to actually pick apart Kelly Kelly, but instead she sort of toys with her and just sort of flicks her in the forehead. The segment, to me, a little bizarre, doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, of course it doesn't make sense. I mean, last week you have the Bella twins running away from Karma smartly, yet this week they stick around in the ring and then decide to attack her. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
This is obviously just to get Karma's face into the spotlight. I mean, that's what every week, that's what we're going to see every week until something happens of significance.
So they're just going to continue to feed her divas every week to push her as the monster?
It looks like that. I'm surprised a lot of the divas go along with this. I mean, they're completely, I mean, with Michael Cole interrupting the Divas division, with Karma coming out and single-handedly destroying every single lady on the roster, I mean, the Divas division is a joke at this point.
Oh, it's terrible.
I don't get it. Like, you're single-handedly ruining a really good thing, because the Divas division does have potential to be interesting.
Okay, here's my question to you. Who in the Divas division can you see defeating Karma?
At this point, none.
Not even Beth Phoenix?
I think that would be a good storyline. That's probably where they're heading with this. But no, I don't think that. I don't see anyone defeating Karma anytime soon. I think she's going to single-handedly pick apart everyone one by one. And it kind of looks like she's focusing on Kelly Kelly at this point. But you don't even know. I mean, it's just every day, every week, it's a random thing. He comes out, destroys someone who, weirdly enough, stands frozen in the ring. Yeah. If you have this giant monster coming down to the ring,
you run away.
Why are you not leaving the ring? Why are you standing there frozen in fear?
Exactly why it didn't make sense this week.
Poor writing.
It is. It's terrible.
I totally believe that you can come up with better ideas than having, you know, three wrestlers standing frozen in the ring waiting for this girl who takes 20 minutes to get to the ring, you know, waiting for her to come in and pick you apart. Like, that makes no sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
Regardless, the winner of this match was Kelly Kelly. We then cut to the back again, where again we see The Miz with his former tag team partner, The Big Show, where it appears that they're in a heated argument about something.
Obviously the John Cena thing.
And, yeah.
You know, they're trying to build it up, right?
We head to break, and when we return to break, it's a shot of the Alamo Dome, because, of course, they're in San Antonio, and they plug that new Randy Orton movie, which is called That's What I Am. What are your thoughts on that?
Actually, you know what? Out of all the films that WWE has made, this is the only one I've actually got an interest in seeing.
I think it does look to be the most successful. I mean, we don't know, obviously, at this point.
No, I haven't seen it at this point.
I should say it has the most potential to be successful, because it actually does look like it's got a decent script to it, and Ed Harris is
a big name, right?
And this is the first time that they're using a wrestler in a supporting role,
yes,
not in a lead role.
Yeah, they weren't pushing it.
Which is a different take, you know, it's something different.
I agree.
Well, James, you can see that movie exclusively at Walmart.
I'm going to rush out and buy it right after the show.
Rey Mysterio's music hits, and he comes down to the ring to say hola to the people of San Antonio, and that he's here to say the truth. He cuts a promo on R-Truth, saying he doesn't blame his friends or other people for his own problems, and that he doesn't flip out when he doesn't get his own way. Kind
of
like someone we know named R-Truth.
Of course, it's Babyface, right?
He then says he likes to handle business like a man by calling out the guy who jumped him. He then calls out R-Truth and says he'll show him why he doesn't belong in that or any other main event on Raw. Truth doesn't appear, and we cut to break, leaving Rey standing in the ring for the entire time. I actually laugh at this because
I know
Rey Mysterio calls out R-Truth, and then they go to commercial break, and literally the crowd must have been waiting in silence for a good 3 or 4 minutes while the audience at home were watching commercials.
It's kind of weird how they do that. I mean, like,
well, I understand why, and here's why they're doing it. As someone who works in television, I can tell you this. People who are watching Raw are also probably people with a PVR.
That's true.
They are fast-forwarding commercials. Now, I actually read an interesting blog from Jeff Probst, who is the executive producer, or one of the producers, on Survivor. And he mentioned that this is the way television is going. Because everyone is fast-forwarding commercials, the only way people are going to pay attention to products, you know, that are trying to market themselves is by product placement in a show.
So they got
to
put it at kind of like anticlimactic points.
Exactly. Like, right. For example, in the show Survivor, they can do challenges geared towards products that they sponsor. For example, I watched them do a Survivor competition one time where they had to build something using only Craftsman tools.
Oh, I remember that now. Right, so they were pushing the Craftsman.
Which is
a sponsor.
Survivor has that luxury of perfect product placement. I think the show Survivor does it better than anyone.
No, yeah, pretty good.
WWE doesn't have that luxury of placing products within their show. I don't know if you remember, there was a Raw a long time ago where they promised no commercial breaks.
I remember that.
And they tried different things with, like, for example, Cole and Lawler were sitting at the desk and they had KFC on their table.
Oh, right, and they were plugging it themselves.
Yeah, they were doing
their own kind of weird commercials.
When they were doing on cameras with Cole and Lawler, they would be sitting there with a bucket of chicken eating KFC. That's called product placement within the show. Well, I think they realize that that's sort of tacky to have them eating KFC at the desk.
Yeah.
So what they do is they implement these commercials at times when you least expect them.
Right.
That's an example of this is.
Yeah, the whole anticlimactic.
The downside is, though, you have to make the crowd sit for 5 minutes while we go to commercial break.
That kind of kills some of the heat for the match, don't you think?
I think it kills everything. I would never want to do it. I think they need to come up with something a little more creative than that.
Yeah.
You can't make a crowd sit in silence for 5 minutes waiting for R-Truth to come out.
That kind of takes the wind out of everything.
Absolutely.
Don't you think?
So when we do return from break, it's actually not R-Truth that comes out, but Ricardo Rodriguez, and he introduces Alberto Del Rio, who drives out in another expensive car and is dressed for action.
Ah. He then makes his way to the ring and says that Rey is the reason why he's not facing Cena for the title, and actually had something else to say.
don't deserve to be in the same show as me. You know why? Because I am puro Latino. A full-blooded Mexican. Not like these people, these pochos from San Antonio.
So I actually really like this angle that they're going here. They're obviously pulling in the Latino audience with Rey and Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah.
You know, they're speaking in Spanish, which I don't understand Spanish. You don't understand Spanish.
No.
But the people that do speak Spanish will probably genuinely be interested in this storyline.
Yeah.
I think it's a smart move. I personally would have waited to see this match at WrestleMania. I like this match at WrestleMania.
Well, they've already done this feud on SmackDown. I mean,
yeah, and they briefly touched on it. I would like to see a full blown storyline built heading into WrestleMania involving Rey Mysterio and Alberto Del Rio. I don't think we're gonna get it.
No, I don't think so. No, especially now that they're both on Raw and they've already faced each other. It's, you know, the way WWE writes and how they schedule their things out.
My biggest problem is that there's not a lot of good opponents for Rey Mysterio left at WrestleMania. I mean, yes, Cody Rhodes was good at this year's WrestleMania, but something that actually has meaning and you can build a whole Latino audience behind either Rey or Alberto Del Rio at WrestleMania. I mean, that could be a mid-card match with main event potential.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree with you there.
I understand that we are at the post-WrestleMania lull and that they need to find matches, but I do believe that this one could have waited until next year's WrestleMania, especially heading into Miami. I mean, that's a good Latino audience there.
Yeah, no, it's a hot crowd for the Mexican audience.
So this actually sets up Rey Mysterio versus Alberto Del Rio in a non-title match.
Yeah.
Another good match by both wrestlers with back-and-forth action. At one point, mid-match, R-Truth begins to yell into the microphone out of nowhere, interrupts the match from one of the suites high up into the audience.
Yeah, it turns out he's like in one of the grandstand suites or something.
Yeah, he proceeds to, quote, "Call the policia. We have a thief among us."
Yeah, remember, Rey stole his spot in the number one contenders match from last week's Raw and his shot at the title at Over the Limit. So he's basically calling Rey Mysterio a thief here. But
I guess. Apparently, you can just interrupt a match, you know, mid-match with a microphone and call guys out from the back end of the stadium.
Welcome to WWE.
The end spot of this match featured Rey with a seated splash onto Alberto, followed by the setup for the 619, which Ricardo Rodriguez came and interrupted before being executed himself. The ref called for the bell, resulting in Rey winning by DQ, thanks to Ricardo.
Yeah, that was... Anyways.
I think you're actually going to see a little more Ricardo Rodriguez. They're sort of slowly bringing him into the physical picture.
Yeah, I'd like to actually see. He's probably a wrestler, actually.
He is a wrestler.
Just, yeah.
And you can see that they're slowly introducing that. I think this is the beginning of more with him.
He did a sick looking dropkick on last week's Raw. Alex Riley?
I think he's a talented wrestler. He may not have the look to be a professional wrestler, but I think he's got the skill set.
He's probably got three of the four that we always talk about, right? Mm-hmm. But anyways, after the match, Del Rio then lays a beating onto Rey and tries to remove his mask before leaving the ring.
Almost does it, by the way.
Yeah, almost does it. That was kind of scary for a half second there, but yeah. Not really. But not really. R-Truth then enters the ring and lays down yet another beating to Rey. He waits for him to get to his feet and then ends the segment with R-Truth's finisher, the What's Up. It was at this point where R-Truth almost looks like he has no choice but to act the way he did, kind of almost blames Rey forcing him to do what he did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he then grabs a mic, says no one challenges R-Truth because he makes the challenges, and on Sunday Rey's gonna get got.
Apparently that's a new line for R-Truth.
Gonna get got.
I have no idea what that means.
I guess he didn't pass English 12, did he?
I was saying to you earlier, I saw an episode of Entourage one time where Pauly Shore was pretending to be the Ashton Kutcher of that show, and he had a TV show called Gotcha, and Pauly Shore sets up. Yeah,
I've never seen that one.
Pauly Shore sets up Johnny Drama at the end of the show. Make a long story short, then instead of saying "you got punked," Pauly Shore's big line was "you got got."
Oh God, that sounds so terrible, don't you think?
I don't know what that means.
It's so stereotypical, like African American almost. You know.
Be careful. Like, there,
yeah, Josh. I don't. I gotta be careful with what I say here, but you see where I'm coming from,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do.
But
we then cut to backstage with The Miz talking to CM Punk, one of these many vignettes throughout the evening, and Mason Ryan again, presumably about the match where someone will take on John Cena tonight. Then we go to commercial. Coming back from commercial break, Jerry Lawler and Michael Cole are in the ring, ready for the official contract signing for their upcoming match at Over the Limit. Cole states the contract will not be official until he signs it, but before he does, he wants Lawler to remind everyone what he promised Cole last week.
Lawler then goes on to repeat his stipulations, which include giving Cole his Hall of Fame ring off his finger if he loses, and if it should come to it, he will be the person to personally induct Cole into the Hall of Fame. After both then sign the paperwork, Cole then laughs at Lawler for not reading the fine print in the contract. The paperwork states that this match will not be any kind of ordinary match, but yet a kiss-my-foot match, with the loser having to kiss the other person's foot.
Cole reminds Lawler of what he will be kissing this Sunday and reveals his foot with the same fungus that he had last week.
Oh, God, it looked like shake and bake chicken almost.
Sprinkled,
you know,
on top of his foot. Jeez. It's pretty bad.
That was bad.
Cole reminds Lawler with a video package of Lawler's previous Kiss My Foot match, in which he fought Bret Hart back in 1995 and had to kiss not only Bret, or he had to kiss his own foot, actually.
He kissed Bret Hart's foot first.
Then he was forced to kiss
his own foot.
Which then leads us to this.
Lawler. Nobody even remembers him being a world champion. No, really. You know, some people may say that Jack Swagger being my sidekick may have been the best thing to happen to his career. Some people say that the only reason Jack Swagger was in WrestleMania this year was because of Michael Cole. Now, I believe people...
So, this is, of course, Michael Cole referencing Jack Swagger, because Lawler brought up the fact that, you know, Jack Swagger, he did respect Jack Swagger, I think he did say at one point.
They're almost kind of teasing a face turn there with Swagger.
Yeah, I would love to see that, because Swagger needs something, and I would love to see that. Swagger is, of course, hurt by those words that we just heard from Michael Cole, and tells Lawler to have fun, because he's done with Cole. After Swagger leaves the ring, Cole then backtracks and attempts to suck up to Lawler. He reminds him of their 14-year working relationship, but Lawler, of course, tells him to stuff it.
Michael Cole, he just plays the perfect cowardly heel, does he not?
I think Michael Cole is excellent in his role. I mean, this match heading into Over the Limit on Sunday, I'm actually quite interested in, because could you imagine Jerry Lawler having to induct Michael Cole into the Hall of Fame?
Well, you know, that's the interesting thing, because they've had this feud going now for, 5 months now? And it's still interesting,
I think it's one of the most entertaining segments in the shows.
And nowadays in the world of wrestling, that's something that's kind of a rarity, is to see an angle that it can actually go a certain distance, which is rare. And still be interesting. Because, yeah. I mean, look at last year, for example, when Cena was in that 5-6 month feud with the Nexus. I mean, it just started getting boring and started getting stale.
Yeah.
Right?
I have a feeling that Vince McMahon is behind this ultimately. He's the one that keeps pushing for this angle to drag out.
I think he just loves what Cole's done with his character.
I think so too. And I think it's excellent. I think they've both carried it, and they're brought JR into the whole mix and Swagger. I think it's been an excellent storyline, and I'm actually glad to see it eating up a lot of the TV time.
Yeah.
We then go backstage where once again Miz talking to someone new. This time it's Kane, presumably about facing Cena later in the show. Big Show walks in, and we actually find out at that point that they will be defending the tag team titles against Mason Ryan and CM Punk at Over the Limit. This brings us to our next match, which is Big Show and Kane versus Michael McGillicuddy and David Otunga of the New Nexus in a non-title match. Now, in another slow-paced, typical Show-Kane match, the end spot had Mason Ryan teasing his involvement. Kane grabbed Michael McGillicuddy by the throat, and Punk interfered with a kick to the back of the head, and Michael followed that up with a running neckbreaker to Kane for the three count. Is that Michael McGillicuddy's finishing move, the swinging neckbreaker?
The running swinging neckbreaker? I think so.
I've never seen it before, but it's interesting.
Again, disgracing the tag team titles right here. Here you have two guys put together who have never wrestled before, and they come out and they beat the tag team champions.
It wasn't a clean finish,
but still.
I know.
You know, and I mean, David Otunga, I mean, God, this guy is just absolutely horrid.
I'm surprised he's even still
here. He's horrid in the ring. I have never seen this guy do anything other than a scoop slam, a punch, and a kick.
I like Michael McGillicuddy. I haven't really seen enough of him on the microphone.
He's a little bit more skilled. He's Henning's son, isn't he?
Yes,
he's Kurt Henning's son? That's right.
So Miz is then seen backstage yet again. this time talking to R-Truth. Could he have any more TV time tonight?
No kidding.
Now, after an interview, he was talking to R-Truth, sorry. After an interview with Kane and Big Show, we then get our weekly Zack Ryder glimpse as he hands a shirt to John Cena as he prepares to walk out for his main event match, which is next. I'm actually liking what they're doing with Zack Ryder. They're sort of teasing the crowd.
Well, this is an example of Vince knowing what the crowd wants, but he's not giving it to him just yet. He's letting them salivate. He's letting it build up. And I think they're going to do something real good with Zack Ryder. That's just my opinion.
Now, for those of you who don't know, Zack Ryder has decided to take the fate of his own career into his own hands. He's started producing his own YouTube show, which has been very, very successful for him. Typically, that can actually hurt a wrestler because if you say one wrong thing...
It's a very, very ballsy move on his part. That's
you
for
say
sure.
one wrong thing... to the about the WWE or something you're not supposed to say, and you're in big trouble with Vince McMahon and quite possibly out the door. So it's a very gutsy move on his part. I do think it saved his career, and I also think that Zack Ryder is probably one of the most underrated stars that they've never given a chance.
Definitely. He's definitely one of the most underutilized talents they have.
Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to see where they go with this. I like how they're just sort of teasing the crowd with these quick 15-second interactions, and both times it's actually been with John Cena, the week before and this week as well.
So they're kind of giving them that rub off of Cena, the biggest, right? They're giving them that little bit of a rub to, you know, their biggest name in the company in Cena. And then, you got Zack Ryder appearing in...
Which to me says Cena's probably a fan of Zack Ryder. I mean, he wouldn't agree to doing that. I don't think... I don't know.
I couldn't say anything on that. But anyways, after a commercial break, The Miz comes out and says that he's decided that tonight's main event will be a no-holds-barred match. And he wants Cena to get the heck out here. But before Cena can even hit the ring, Swagger comes out, hits him from behind, thus creating the main event match. And yes, it's Jack Swagger versus John Cena in a no-holds-barred non-title match.
Which kind of surprised me because I thought after the whole incident with him and Cole, with him walking out on Cole earlier in the show, I actually thought maybe we might see a bit of a face turn from Swagger. That obviously didn't happen.
No, they kind of just squashed the whole thing with that, which I'm kind of, I'm not too impressed about, but... The fact of the matter is they need heels at this point, right? Mm-hmm. So
during this match, one notable spot was when Swagger used the Raw GM laptop as a weapon. I thought that was kind of cool. We hadn't really seen that yet.
That was cool, yeah.
You think someone would have thought of it by now. Swagger grabs a steel chair as well, hits Cena in the back with it. He then sets up Cena on his back with a chair on top of him, and Swagger hits a Swagger bomb but can only get a near fall. Cursing, Swagger then sets up the chair in the turnbuckles.
Now, here's my thing. Don't you think that move would hurt Swagger more than it would hurt Cena?
No, James.
But I mean, come on, really? Like, I can only suspend my disbelief for so long, right?
Dude,
like,
I could name you probably 30 moves where they would probably hurt the guy giving the move. But that's regardless.
Yeah.
So Cena then gets a second win and fights back, but Swagger cuts him off with a belly-to-belly suplex for near fall. Swagger then puts Cena in the ankle lock, which he promptly rolls through and out of. Swagger then charges at Cena, but he moves out of the way, and Swagger runs into the steel... runs into the steel chair in the corner that he placed there earlier. Cena then does his typical five-knuckle shuffle spot we've seen a billion times and ends it with a attitude adjustment followed by an STF, to which Swagger taps out.
And taps out quite fast, actually.
I am not a fan of this. I don't know why you would want to bury Jack Swagger. I was a huge fan when he won Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 26. Yep. I was a huge fan of when they gave him the title the next night. Like, you should have... What did he do that was so wrong?
I don't understand. What did he do that buried him?
I thought he was excellent. And this thing with Cole has really excelled him as well. Like, push the guy into the spotlight. We're at a time when we need stars. Swagger is a perfect example to me of someone who has it.
No, I agree. Except maybe a little bit of that speech impediment. Is that holding him back?
No, I like that.
Is that really something you can hold him back for?
I like that. It's different.
No, yeah, it does. It gives him that little bit of something that, kind of like Ziggler's blonde hair. It sets him apart from the crowd.
Exactly.
Right?
And I enjoy it. I think that's something that is definitely unique to Jack Swagger. And I like it. You like it. Yeah. I guess Vince and the WWE doesn't like it. I have no idea. Maybe that's not the reason. It could be something else.
Yeah.
After the match, Miz comes out to applaud Cena on his win and tells him that it was impressive. He then goes on to rant about all the different ways he can make Cena say, "I quit" on Sunday. and proceeds to destroy a highly expensive jib crane camera by smashing it into the stage.
Okay, as someone who works in the television industry, you gotta tell me how much one of these jib cranes cost.
Oh, that jib crane probably worth 20 grand. Oh. But we're not he's not really ruining the actual jib crane himself.
It's the camera, though.
He's ruining the camera and the head, the motorized head that that camera...
Now, isn't that more expensive than the actual crane?
But, you know, yeah, but you... You know, WWE has a budget for this. You know, they sometimes bring out expensive vehicles and smash the expensive vehicles. You know, they budget this stuff into their show.
So this
As someone who works in television, though, it's a little hard to see.
No kidding.
But I like it. I like that they do that because you don't see it anywhere else.
This, to me, was just another example of the WWE going, look how much money we have.
Yeah.
Look what we can do. Look how much money we have. And, yeah. You know.
Miz then sends Alex Riley to grab something from under the ring and pulls out a large black pipe, telling Cena that these are the obvious things. I don't know what that means.
Oh, these are the obvious things that he can... Sorry, my notes are kind of messed up there. Yeah, these are the obvious things that he can make him say I quit with.
I see.
Like pipes and chairs and all that kind of garbage.
Yeah, right? Miz tells Cena that he is the most ruthless, intelligent, and conniving person that Cena has ever faced, and then proceeds to say he has found a way to win that no one has ever seen before and guarantees he will be WWE champion after Sunday.
Yeah.
Are you believing that?
Are you kidding me?
Why don't you believe it?
Why don't I believe it? For the main reason that Cena told The Rock that he was going to hold the title all the way till next WrestleMania. I mean, if you're going to have Cena drop the belt, he's going to look like a joke.
Yeah.
And I mean that's... They got to be building this up to be one of the biggest matches they've ever had in the history of their company.
It could be.
Well, no, it's got to be. And I mean, if you have Cena not follow through with what he says on live television like that, it's just going to make him look like a joke, and it's gonna take away from the match.
You're hearing it from the both of us right now. John Cena will keep the WWE Championship until WrestleMania.
That's
next
a Smack Talk Radio Live promise.
Absolutely. So, sorry, I've lost my notes yet again. So Alex Riley then tries to sneak attack Cena, but with that pipe that he had grabbed, but it stopped. The Miz then gets a couple hits in with the pipe. At this point, I realize that pipe's not a real pipe.
That pipe's not doing too much damage here, guys.
No, because the way he was hitting him with it, that would knock someone out cold.
Oh, jeez.
So when he goes for a third strike, Cena miraculously recovers and turns it around on Miz and Riley, hitting them both with the pipe. I'm sorry, you hit me with a steel pipe.
I'm going down. I know. But this is Super Cena we're talking about. You know, this is the hero of 7 to 13-year-olds everywhere. So
finally, James, how does the show end?
Well, Cena then tells Miz to bring his millions of ways to beat him and then bring a million more, because at the pay-per-view this Sunday, he's got a hurtin' a coming, and he will make him say, I quit. Raw then ends with Cena standing tall in the ring yet again.
All right. Well, that was the tale of the tape, James. Now, it's a good time to remind everyone that you can email us anytime before, during, and after the show at onair@smacktalkradiolive.com. And if it's any good, we'll put it on the air. Later in the show, we'll also be putting you, the listener, on the air. If you want to call in and join in on the conversation, go to skype.com and download the software and give us a call through that. Our Skype name is Smack Talk Radio, one word.
The poll question. Log on to facebook.com/smacktalkradio and cast your vote.
Okay, tonight's poll question. Now that he's passed away, do you think that the WWE will induct the Macho Man Randy Savage into the Hall of Fame posthumously? Yes, no, or don't know for sure?
You know, originally when you asked me this, I wasn't sure. I do think now that I've had some time to think about it that he probably will. The major question I have with this poll question is, how good is Macho Man's relationship with Vince McMahon?
I don't know. It was. I think it's kind of a strained relationship, kind of like the one that he has with Jim Ross, don't you?
I think so as well. I'm not really sure how it's going to go. I really believe, though, that if you are to say, does he deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, yes or no, I definitely think so.
Yeah.
Well...
No, I definitely think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, come on, it's the Macho Man Randy Savage. I grew up with him, you grew up with him. Like, Put him in the Hall of Fame, come on.
Absolutely. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. Coming up on Smack Talk Radio Live, we talk with ASW independent wrestler, the architect, Mark Anthony. We also have tonight's top five and our post-to-post report next.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
Catching you up with the business of the business. It's time for the post-to-post report.
All right, James, the post-to-post report, our weekly look into the business of the business.
I love this segment.
All right, let's get things started right off the top. Of course, the main story, Macho Man Randy Savage, also known as Randall Poffo, has died. TMZ reported on Friday morning that Randall Poffo, also known as the Macho Man, Randy Savage, like I said earlier, was killed Friday morning in a car accident in Tampa, Florida. Lanny Poffo, Randy's brother, told TMZ that Randy suffered a heart attack while he was behind the wheel around 9:25 a.m., lost control of his vehicle. Savage was 58 years old. Now, earlier this month, Savage celebrated his one-year anniversary with his new wife, Lynn. Now, Lynn was a passenger in the vehicle at the time of the collision, but survived with minor injuries. In an update to this story, Florida Highway Patrol officials say Savage was driving his 2009 Jeep Wrangler when he veered across a concrete median through oncoming traffic and collided head-on with a tree. Both were wearing seatbelts, and alcohol is not suspected to be a factor.
So, do you think it's the heart attack, or was it the crash that killed him?
If I would think the probably the heart attack led to the crash, which probably had him done for.
Yeah.
It's a real shame. I mean, it's one of those instances where, you know, you wake up in the morning and boom, you're gone an hour later. Like, yeah. It's terrible. It's a terrible way to end the legacy of Randy Savage. It's sad.
I know I was shocked when you texted me the message, right?
What will be your biggest memory? I know we get to this later, but what will be your biggest memory of Randy Savage?
Probably during the 80s when he was running with Hogan and they were doing the Mega Powers.
Yeah.
That's when I think of Randy Savage, that's what I think.
Yeah.
It's either that or when he was part of the NWO, actually, kind of.
Mm-hmm. I liked him.
Strangely enough.
His time in WCW was excellent.
It wasn't bad, no.
I liked it. Yeah. I thought he was good. Remember Madness? Macho Madness.
The Macho Madness.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I would say my favorite moment or feud, one of my favorite storylines in wrestling was actually Jake the Snake Roberts versus Macho
Man. That was a really good one, yes.
They did that so well. And I remember when I was a young kid, Jake the Snake was my favorite. And then when he turned heel and went against Macho Man, I was like, I didn't know who to cheer for.
Yeah.
And I thought the whole thing was just done really well. It's a sad thing.
It is sad. Again, another great legend lost to tragedy.
Absolutely. Moving on, Dick Ebersol resigns from NBC Sports. Now, I know you're all probably thinking, Dick Ebersol? What does that have to do with wrestling?
Dick Ebersol?
All right, let me read it to you here. A longtime television partner of the WWE and Vince McMahon, Dick Ebersol, also head of NBC Sports, resigned from his position Thursday. Now, Ebersol, who helped establish major NBC shows such as Sunday Night Football, Saturday Night Live, and was responsible for the major Olympic coverage NBC provides, could not reach a contract agreement with his new bosses at Comcast, who took over NBC Universal earlier this year.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Now, most importantly to us is the relationship Ebersol had with the WWE and his friendship with Vince McMahon. Ebersol and McMahon worked closely together together with the launch of the XFL, had major influence in bringing the show Saturday Night's main event to NBC, and here's the key ingredient, was rumored to be working with Vince in creating the new WWE network set to launch in the future. The WWE last saw Ebersole when he inducted Bob Uecker into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2010.
Oh, so do you think this is going to kind of put some rocks in the road toward this WWE network?
I think it changes the landscape a little bit. I don't know. I mean, none of us really know the vital role that this relationship plays with the launch of the network. But what I do believe is it does diminish the chances of the WWE network getting its own channel. Dick Ebersole has a ton of pull in television in North America.
Oh, jeez, I believe
it. So if Dick Ebersole wants to, you know, convince someone to give Vince McMahon its own separate channel on TV, I'm sure that he could pull those strings. I don't know enough about Dick Ebersole's role, you know, as head of NBC Sports, but I do know he's a very prominent figure. He had a great relationship with Vince McMahon, and that is all out the door with Ebersole's departure. I don't know what Vince McMahon's relationship is with everyone else.
So does that mean by extension that Saturday Night's main event will be out the door?
Good question. That's something that's yet to be addressed. Because I know that, you know, not everyone in television is a fan of the WWE.
No.
You know, a lot of networks won't even consider taking it on the air, no matter what the ratings are like.
Yeah, professional wrestling still has this horrible stigma to it.
Yeah, so if you have a good relationship with one of the biggest networks in, you know, the United States, and your relationship with a certain person is now diminished, you're kind of back at square one. I mean, you're left scrambling to, okay, well, do they want to have the WWE
or
around?
Or do they not? Yeah.
Yeah, so it's an interesting scenario. I think the news hasn't really happened yet, but we're just reporting it this time. But the news will come out, you know, over the next few months as to how this will all play out. Now, switching gears a little bit, we talk WWE lots, obviously, all the time. One thing we do ignore is TNA.
For a good reason.
Total Nonstop Action. But here's an interesting headline. Now, in a complete opposite direction that the WWE is taking, TNA has decided to rebrand its company. In a press release sent out on Monday, TNA and Spike TV announced that TNA's flagship program, TNA Impact, would now be rebranded as Impact Wrestling. Quote, "While the name change is subtle, it's also very powerful. TNA is proud to be in the wrestling business and not afraid to say it. And to emphasize our commitment, we have added the word wrestling to our already well-known Impact brand." This quote coming from TNA Chief Marketing Officer Al Ovadia. The release also says, quote, "In addition to rebranding Impact Wrestling, TNA is launching the tagline, Wrestling Matters, a statement that reflects every aspect of TNA wrestling, from program content to marketing to live events."
So here's TNA trying to stick it in their way to Vince and the WWE.
This is a direct shot at Vince McMahon and the WWE's decision to eliminate wrestling from their vocabulary.
Yeah.
I saw TNA Impact for the first time, not for the first time ever, but with their new rebranded.
The new rebranding. It's like a bluey, it almost looks like SmackDown kind of, doesn't
it? I actually really like it. I think it will work.
It's something different. I mean, the product and everything is still the same.
Mm-hmm.
It looks a little bit different, but I mean, the actual content and product itself, it hasn't changed.
It's setting them up for the future, though. I think it gives them a fresh start a little bit. I mean,
and they kind of need that. They need something.
The things,
right?
People say about TNA sometimes is pretty harsh. This kind of mixes
it up a
little
bit. Yeah, but you
know
what? But they bring it on themselves, though.
Of course.
The stuff that people say about TNA, it's not unfounded, right?
No, I agree. I mean, it is warranted. But what I'm saying is this sort of cleans the slate a little bit and allows them to possibly change the fans' minds a little bit. Because I watched TNA on Thursday, and I actually really liked the new look. I liked that Impact Wrestling logo that was on the ring apron. I liked that they had it on the big plasma screen above, you know, everyone's heads there.
That did look kind of cool there.
Yeah. I think the look is very modern. It's fresh. It's unique. And if I think about it, I'm glad that they're keeping the name wrestling as opposed
too.
To the WWE going.
Oh, I'm glad
away
about
from it.
That. But here's two things that TNA needs to do to improve their stuff. Number one, get out of that Impact Zone and get out there and do live shows. Well, not live shows, but shows in front of large crowds.
Eric Bischoff has said that himself.
You know, they got to get out of that Impact Zone, number one. Number two, get rid of Vince Russo as your booker. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, this guy is the worst Booker, I mean, he's done so many bad angles. Shit, I could pull five or six for you off the top of my head right now, but I'm not going to. But
well, who knows? Maybe 5-6 years from now, we will be talking about TNA and not the WWE, all because of this bold move of rebranding themselves.
It's possible. It's completely possible.
It could be the best thing ever to happen, and we have no idea.
That's just my opinion. That's what TNA needs to do to improve.
Absolutely. Now, a big change has come to the way the WWE signs their contracts with their talent. Let me read this one for you. The WWE is now requiring contracted talent to obtain and maintain their own medical insurance. Details of this amendment to talent contracts include WWE requiring talent to purchase insurance for their own protection. What's notable about this? The WWE is not picking up any of the cost since talent are classified as independent contractors.
Have they always been classified as independent contractors?
That's been the ongoing struggle with wrestlers in the WWE for years. That's why you don't have a union in wrestling.
Well, you can't really have unions in wrestling, can
you?
You
can have that a union in any industry.
Well, doesn't that kind of throw a monkey wrench into the whole booking process? I mean, if you've got a union now, you've got... Like, say, for example, you've got guys... Say if there was a wrestling union way back in the day, well, now you'd have guys like Hogan and whatnot who have been in this union for so long. Well, they're going to already have this pull, right? If they don't want to lose a
match, but you can configure a union.
Do you kind of go know where I'm kind of going with this?
Yeah, but you're bringing seniority into storylines.
Well, that's... Well, what's the...
There, you can avoid that. You don't have to...
How would you avoid that, though?
Well, first of all, a union is not always all about seniority. You don't have to write storylines based off a union seniority. That would never happen.
No, but I know, but seniority is, isn't that one of the whole main things of having a union is guys who have been there get more perks than people who haven't been there for a long time?
Yes.
Isn't that the whole point of a union?
But not always. I mean, a lot of people look at a union as a place of employment that provides benefits, has better benefits than someone who is non-unionized.
Okay, yeah, I'm not an expert on these things.
Well,
so,
but what I'm saying is they've never been a union, and the part of the reason is because WWE has always attached this label of independent contractors to a wrestler. If they ever make a WWE wrestler an employee of the company, not only do they have to pay their salary, but now they have to pay them, you know, social insurance,
all the benefits,
medical, dental.
Yeah.
They avoid a huge cost by labeling them as independent contractors. Part of the problem with that is, you could make the argument that, are they independent contractors? Because me, myself, I'm a independent contractor in television.
Right.
But I have the ability to go work for anyone I want. Right? I can work for CBC one day. I could work for TSN the next. I could work for Sportsnet the next day. WWE forces exclusivity on their wrestlers to only wrestle for the WWE. So can the argument be made that they're not independent contractors? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that this is a bit of a shot to... It's a bit of a shot to the wrestlers by making them pay for their own medical insurance. If you're going to make millions off these wrestlers, which they are...
You can do is pay for their insurance,
and,
right?
And provide them with the assurance that if they do get hurt doing what they do, you know, they are going to be compensated.
They're
going to
be covered,
for it.
You know, even if it doesn't happen in the ring, right?
What's funny is that prior to this announcement, the WWE was not mandating it, but only recommending it. A quote on the WWE corporate website read, "Each year, WWE holds a workshop for our talent that explains the value of obtaining proper health insurance, detailing the unexpected occurrences and costs of healthcare that may arise. It also gives talent the tools to explore healthcare options at any time." Now, the WWE's rationale for mandating health insurance, the talent can write off the cost as a business expense. Big deal.
Is that really worth it?
No, it's not even a big deal at all.
You tell me, as an independent contractor, is that really worth it?
No. I would never pay for something in hopes that I can write it off as a business. It's not a fair trade-off.
No, it's not at all.
See, the people that make... The guys at the top, you know, Randy Orton, Triple H, Cena, those guys, this doesn't affect them at all. Because they're making such big bucks that they can probably fork out the $5,000
or whatever it costs to pay for
the insurance, right? The guys where it does matter is, you know, for example, Zack Ryder, let's say, who's probably making bare minimum, right?
Yeah.
And...
Guy Trent Barretta or something.
And so
if
he's not making enough money, he can take that risk of not having health insurance and saving himself $5,000 a year, which he probably would need. But now the WWE is forcing him to take that medical insurance, and basically you're throwing away $5,000. You're not throwing it away, but your $5,000 of your paycheck is out the door.
Well, as a wrestler too, you'd be an idiot to not get
Oh, I agree.
Medical insurance, because I mean, if you get hurt in the ring, which
I agree, but
can happen at any time.
But what the point I'm trying to make is that it's not the high end guys that this matters, because they probably already have health insurance anyways. It's the bottom guys, the new guys that are just getting into the industry that haven't had the time to save those WWE paychecks. Those are the guys that are going to suffer. You're probably almost going to lose money in the beginning before you start making it.
Yeah.
Right? The financials, as we get to every single week. Last I looked, the WWE stock was at $10.29 a share.
That's
going down.
Going down like a rock. Jeez. Yeah. What was it at? It was at almost 14 and a half before
WrestleMania,
wasn't it?
13, I think.
Was it 13?
Yeah. Last week it was at 11.
It was like the high 13s before WrestleMania, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes. But last week it was at 11. So it's steadily, you know, going down.
Jeez.
I don't know what to say about this at this point. It's a wait and see game. I mean, Vince McMahon has promised new business ventures. You know, they want to go out and seek new business ventures. I'm interested to see how that pays off for them and if that's reflected in the stock. Because right now, if I had money, I would not be putting my money in the stock, in the WWE stock at all.
Definitely not the way it's been dropping.
No.
That's for sure.
Now, getting to the ratings of WWE, the Monday Night Raw rating from their May 16th show this past Monday scored a 3.08 rating, down 1/10 of a ratings point from last week's show, 3.18. Now, Raw also declined to an average 4.7 million viewers. What's worth mentioning here is that there was no major competition on Monday, such as the NBA playoffs. Raw did rank number one, however, on cable TV in terms of overall viewers, but was the lowest overall rating for them since January when WWE faced off against college football competition. It's actually the first time WWE hasn't touched 5 million viewers since February.
Really?
What does that mean? Official post-WrestleMania law.
Oh, big time.
Now, just to give a simple synopsis of where the WWE sits, the 2011 average rating so far has been 3.43. The average since WrestleMania, so the average post-WrestleMania, 3.37. So obviously, people are tuning out.
Yeah. It's that period between WrestleMania and SummerSlam that's just, It's dull. It's that part of the year in wrestling that's dull, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry about that, James.
Yeah, no worries.
I didn't fade it in nicely there.
That's all right. But no, again, it's that time of year between WrestleMania and SummerSlam where they're trying to build new feuds and trying to push new guys and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
Yeah. Folks, coming up on the show, we're going to talk local wrestling scene. We're going to run down the ECCW's next show, Redemption. And we're also going to talk live with ASW independent wrestler, The Architect, Mark Anthony.
And always, folks, don't forget, tonight's Top 5's coming up as well.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
She believe in shooting stars, but she believe in shoes and cars. Wood floors in the new apartment. Cool tour from the store's departments. You more like love to start. I'm more of the trips to Florida, order the orders, views of the water, straight from a page of your favorite author. And the weather's so breezy, man, why can't life always be this easy? She in the mirror dancing so sleazy, I get a call like, where are you, Yeezy? And try to hit you with the old wapty, till I get flashed by the paparazzi. Damn, these got me. I hate these more than
I
not.
Call, I know you love to show off, but I never thought that you would take it this far. What do I know?
The local wrestling scene, bringing you up to date with the promotions all over the Pacific Northwest.
All right, James, it's time for the local wrestling scene. And as always, I maintain that this is my favorite segment of the show.
I like the post-to-post. You like the local wrestling scene.
Well, ECCW did have a show recently in Kitsilano. And what's worth mentioning is that it was the Supergirl, Tennille Taylor's last match in ECCW.
Who she wrestled? Nicole Matthews,
yes.
Wasn't it?
She ended up actually losing to Nicole Matthews, but, you know, that's usually how it works. But what's worth mentioning here, James, is that Tennille Taylor is on her way to the WWE.
Oh, she got a developmental contract, didn't she?
Mm-hmm. So she'll be taken off to Florida, and I can't wish her nothing. I have to help wish her all the best of luck, because I'm actually very excited to watch how she progresses through that development camp down in Florida. I think it's great. I'm pretty sure she might be the first. I mean, she's not from Vancouver originally. She's from Australia, but she might be one of the first locals from Vancouver to actually go to the WWE other than John Tenta.
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone else. I could be wrong, but...
Well, all the matches that I've seen her in, she's been technically sound, and I wish her all the best. I hope she makes it.
Absolutely. So, aside from that, looking forward to the next show, ECCW, which, of course, can be found at www.eccw.com. They are featuring a show May 27th at Bridgeview Hall in Surrey called Redemption. Now, this show is going to start out with the Divine Prophet versus Jamie Diaz. Should be a nice opening match.
That should be good, yeah.
They're also going to have Rick versus Alex Plexus. One match that probably everyone's waiting to see is going to be their ECCW Hardcore Championship match. It's actually a thumbtack match.
Ooh, a thumbtack match.
Ravenous Randy, versus Moondog Manson. Any match with Moondog Manson in a hardcore environment, that's something to see live.
Yeah, it's gonna be a bloodbath.
Mm-hmm. And in one of their featured matches, it's actually the face of their poster for this show. It's a Falls Count Anywhere match, Scotty Mac versus Jason Sullivan.
That should be a good match.
Now, I don't know if you remember, but at Chamber of Extreme, which was an excellent show by the way, they actually had Jason Sullivan was the ringside enforcer.
He was the enforcer for the main event, which was kind of like a mock cage they almost made, mm-hmm. right?
I thought that whole
had
Chamber
barbed
of Extreme
wire
match
around the top.
Yeah, the Chamber of Extreme is essentially a steel fence that is about maybe 5 feet. Giving five feet between the ring and the cage.
Yeah.
And it goes all the way around the ring, and there was barbed wire on the top of it. And in the main event, it saw El Fantasmo versus Scotty Mac. And I mean, for that type of match, I thought it was very well done.
It was incredibly well done.
And Jason Sullivan making his presence felt by being the ringside enforcer. It was quite funny. All these wrestlers throughout the match kept coming from out the back.
And he kept throwing them out, which was...
it was pretty entertaining.
So yeah, that kind of leads up to this match on Redemption, right?
Yeah, so it's going to be Scotty Mac versus Jason Sullivan in a Falls Count Anywhere match. And just judging by the look of Jason Sullivan on their promotional poster, it looks like he's coming to fight. Other matches on this show, of course, are going to be NWA ECCW Tag Team Championship match. That's going to be the Bollywood Lions, Gervin Harv Sira, versus Brady Roberts and Kamikaze. I actually haven't seen Brady Roberts and Kamikaze. I'm not sure if they're from around here, but I'm pretty sure they're from out of town. Yeah. I'm actually looking forward to seeing this match.
Yeah, that should be a good one.
And it's also worth mentioning that the Bollywood Lions are going to be featured on Global News. Actually, a couple of shows ago, the Global News was out doing a story on the Bollywood Lions tag team. So that story should be airing on Global News sometime in the near future, heading into hyping up the Pacific Cup, which of course happens not too far away either.
That's their big show of the year, too.
Yeah, and in their main event, actually, I'm not sure if it's the main event, co-main event, doesn't really matter. The NWA Canadian Junior Heavyweight Championship match, Artemis Spencer, who's the champion, versus Ice, who's making his return.
Ice, yeah, he's making his return from where? Toronto, I think, isn't it?
Oh, no. Ice, I believe, lives on the island.
On the island?
Yeah.
He wasn't in Toronto?
Oh, he could have been. I'm not sure. I'm not up to date on what Ice.
Yeah, no, doing. I'm not either.
But regardless, I have seen Ice wrestle before. He's an excellent.
He is. He's very technically sound. Yeah. He's a little bit of a smaller guy, but yeah. He's very technically sound. He knows what he's doing in the ring.
I remember watching him versus Mike Dempsey when they were wrestling for Just Wrestling, and they had some excellent matches mm-hmm. together. One of the things we got to do earlier today, James, was talk to ASW independent wrestler, the Architect Mark Anthony, who is a good friend of ours. And it was pretty interesting.
It was a very good interview. I thought it was very informative.
Yeah, absolutely. He is up and coming in the ASW. And let's show you what exactly he had to say earlier today.
Play it.
All right, we're joined now by independent wrestler, the Architect Mark Anthony. Mark wrestles for All Star Wrestling based out of Vancouver, British Columbia. Mark, how you doing today?
Not bad, gentlemen. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right.
Very good.
So you wrestle for ASW. Could you fill the folks in on what exactly ASW is all about and how you've enjoyed your time there?
Yeah, well, I've wrestled with All Star Wrestling for the last 2 years. It's actually an absolutely great organization. I've worked with the promoter, Michelle Starr, for several years before that. Actually, Michelle Starr was involved in primarily training me and responsible for my professional wrestling training. Right now, All Star Wrestling is doing a lot of fundraising shows. We've worked for a lot of the school boards recently in Maple Ridge and raised a lot of money for their athletic department. It's going really well. We have some shows coming up out of town real soon. And I got some exciting matches planned.
Now, James and I had the pleasure of watching you wrestle recently at Westview Secondary out in Maple Ridge, and we had an absolute blast with your character. Can you talk about what exactly the architect Mark Anthony is all about for the folks who've never seen you wrestle before?
Yeah, it's really a part of who I am. The character concept of the architect, a lot of people look at that and they do ask me, what's that all about? What's the architect all about? We like you out there. We think you're entertaining, but we just don't get it. And to be honest, the promoter has come to me himself and asked me the same question. And the answer I gave him was, the architect is just more like my personality. It's more like my nickname. The architect is, he's egotistical, he's self-centered, he's almost like my sub-personality in a sense, you know. I think that when you go out there and you wrestle and you're working in the ring, you have to bring something else, characteristics of yourself, and you have to bring those on a different level. You have to excel. You have to go out there and find, dig down and find every means possible in order to entertain these people. And for me, that is my character. You know, some guys, they go out there and they do a lot of flips. They are extremely acrobatic, and people love it. That's not my particular style. Unfortunately, I don't know if people enjoy my style or not, but I love to go out there and tell a story as well, especially with my body language and the way I talk. And the architect he's the engineer of no good, the mastermind behind victory. He's dangerous by design. You know, I try to bring these little catchphrases in and really bring a different experience, more in your face. And I know some people think I'm a little cold out there, a little arrogant, and that's part of my style. And I try to connect with people when I'm out there, even if I can entertain five people in the audience, well beyond what they ever expected coming to a wrestling show. Then I feel good about myself at the end of the day, and I think a lot of guys try to take what they can out of wrestling and out of the show, and that's what I get, the entertainment value, and I just try to bring a little bit of myself.
Well, Mark, based on what I saw in Maple Ridge, I was highly entertained there, but I just want to switch gears here a little bit and ask about you and what influenced your decision to get into the wrestling business? Was there anybody in particular who was a great influence on you to make your decision to get in the ring?
Yeah, I had a bunch of great influences, but I think one of my biggest influences was my friends, and I think a lot of your friends influence a lot of who you are and what you become in your life. The people you hang around with are the people you become. My friends, I had a passion for wrestling for many years. I watched every week Raw. I didn't miss it. Couldn't wait to get home. I followed every storyline. I knew all the characters. I knew everything that was being developed, you know. But when I got into professional wrestling, it changed my perception on what the industry is, and you learn a little bit more than what the average fan sees on television. When I was much younger, I only looked at the production value. I didn't see the art form that's behind wrestling, and what it takes to actually go out there and put on a match. A lot of the professional wrestlers that trained me, Vance Nevada, Scotty Mack, Michelle Starr, Disco Fury. These are all guys that are extremely entertaining and have a very high respect for the business. And they were probably my greatest influences within the professional world of wrestling. But when I was younger, no greater influence than my friends. We followed it every week. We always wondered what it would be like to be a professional wrestler, to be that kind of superstar like Shawn Michaels or The Rock, you know, Bret Hart, The Undertaker, all those guys that you dream of being. And they helped drive my focus into professional wrestling.
Now, you talked about guys like Scotty Mack, Michelle Starr, Vance Nevada. Those are the guys responsible for bringing you up in the independent scene. Can you talk about how you got started, the training program you went through, and just how intense is it?
I think a lot of people underestimate professional wrestlers and what you have to do and the work ethic you have to really make it within the industry. A lot of people say, I tell them, I do pro wrestling, and they say, what, like, isn't that like fake? And I always ask them, well, what about wrestling do you think is fake? I mean, when I first started training, in the very first class, Michelle Starr had us rolling around the ring from all corners, and this is to basically to train your balance and to train your ring positioning so that when you are working within the ring, you don't get lost, you don't get dizzy. And so we were doing these rolls around the ring, and we would do them until somebody threw up. That does sound cruel. It wasn't necessarily like we were doing them until somebody threw up, but sometimes it got so tough that that was the only other option to just take a break, and if you had to, you might lose a little bit of your lunch, but it made you stronger. And then a week later, you found out, wait a minute, I don't even feel it anymore. I don't get dizzy anymore. I can do these flips. I can hit these ropes as fast as I want, and it comes to you. And then it doesn't bother you anymore. And that was just the very foundation of training, is conditioning your body. And a lot of people think, oh, I can't wait. I'm going to go into wrestling training first day. I'm going to be doing moonsaults, and I'm going to be doing power bombs. And what a wake-up call it is for those people.
So then, that being said, Mark, what would you have to say to somebody who's never gotten to a ring before and they'd like to try it out?
Well, it's quite simple. I believe you need a passion for wrestling. If you want to become a professional wrestler, you definitely have to love the industry. You have to love what you see on TV. You have to be a fan first and foremost. Also, I would say that you would need to be in good physical condition. You don't need to be in great physical condition, because wrestling will cut you into that physical condition that you need to be in. Like I said, we were saying before, the training regimen is particularly difficult. It's not something that just comes very easy, and it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of skill. So don't kid yourself. You do require a lot of skill to perform properly and to really put a good match on. And if you want to get involved, I'm all for it. I think it's a great thing, especially if you love the industry. And if you think you have what it takes, don't hesitate to come on down and visit our website at www.aswcanada.com.
Well, speaking of having what it takes, I notice here later on in July that you've got a match against Matt Ecstatic, who's making his debut. Can you touch a little bit on that and what we can expect there?
Yeah, Matt's a great kid. He's been training for about a year now. Started right from the bottom and has worked his way right to the end of the regiment now. He's got a lot of potential. I think a lot of people see that. But he's getting a little bit mouthy, and I think I'm going to have to put my foot in it.
Yeah, I noticed
it.
He's been talking a little bit of trash there.
Yeah. He's been talking to all his friends, and you know how the word spreads on now, most of the social messaging. And so he's getting a little bit cocky, and I think I'm going to have to slap him around a bit. And that comes up July 22nd, that's a couple months away here, at the Cloverdale Fairgrounds, and that's his pro debut, so that's his first match. So he's pretty excited, I know that. But unfortunately for him, he's going up against me, and I'm not a light competitor.
Now, Mark, you talk a big game, but we were lucky enough in
at Westview Secondary in Maple Ridge to see that you do have a bit of a soft side to you, a hidden talent, if you will. You think you could fill the folks in on what that hidden talent is?
Yeah, a lot of my friends, call me a Canadian Idol or karaoke. I it's funny that you would mention that.
Why is that?
I believe while you attended, I sang R. Kelly. Did I not? Perfect. It's a perfect choice. No, the world's greatest.
Well, that was my next question, actually, Mark. Is, you know, the world wants to hear your hidden talent. Can you sing a few bars for us? Come on.
You don't want me to sing right now. No, you know, unfortunately, if you want to hear me sing, you're going to have to come on out to one of our live events, because that's where I do the dirty work.
Oh, well, that's good. Nice cop-out, but I'll take it. I just want to remind everyone once again that Saturday, June 18th, Mark Anthony actually does have a match in Powell River, and he's actually competing for the Cruiserweight title. That actually happens before his match against Matt Estatic. Mark, what are your thoughts heading into that Cruiserweight title match?
That is going to be an interesting one. I just found out about this not too long ago from the promoter himself. And it's a debuting belt, so I think I'm going to get a couple debuts here in the next few months. I got the Cruiserweight Championship, so the winner of this match will be the first ever All Star Wrestling Cruiserweight Championship. I believe I will be competing against the Great Kasaki and Adam Ryder, so that should be a good contest. And then of course I have the debut of Matt Estatic, so a couple good debuts here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
All right, Mark, well, we just want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us again. Once again, everyone, if you do want to check out the architect, Mark Anthony, you can do so at www.aswcanada.com. And, Mark, we're looking forward to seeing you compete June 18th.
Thanks again, buddy.
Great. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys as well. Great show. You're doing an awesome job.
How good was that, James?
Oh, that was a fantastic interview. Thank you very much, Mark.
Yes, thank you, Mark. That was excellent. One of the great things I love about this segment is that we can talk ECCW and we can talk ASW.
Yeah, and we can get some of the local talent on here and they can give us their thoughts on...
And there's really no avenue to talk about local wrestling message boards and stuff like that. So this is an excellent chance for wrestlers, you know, to familiarize yourself with certain wrestlers, for them to educate us on
we're just trying to provide that forum, right?
Absolutely. And as we've said before, you know, we're starting with ECCW, ASW, you know, starting in our local market, but we do hope to expand this to other regions, Calgary, Edmonton, down south, Oregon, California, whoever wants to talk on our show about their promotion, we're all ears.
Oh, I agree.
So before we end this segment here, I just want to quickly run down. We talked ECCW Redemption coming up May 27th, I believe it is. Yep. I just want to talk quickly about the ASW All-Star Wrestling, their next show, just to be fair. Saturday, June 18th, we had mentioned it briefly with Mark there. Now, All-Star Wrestling is making its debut in Powell River at the Recreation Complex with Night of Champions, I believe they're calling this event. Raven Lake is in a match yet to be announced her opponent. That's the Divas match for the evening. We had mentioned the ASW Cruiserweight title, Mark Anthony versus Adam Ryder versus the Great Kasaki.
That's the one I'm looking forward to.
Absolutely. The ASW tag team titles are on the line with Gorgeous Michelle Starr and Disco Fury versus Mr. India and TKO, who are the champions currently.
I always enjoy watching Michelle Starr wrestle.
I always enjoy watching Mr. India.
Well, there you go. I'll cheer for him, and you can cheer for Mr. India.
And in the main event, the ASW Trans-Canada title, that would be Mr. Beefy Goodness, Vance Nevada, versus Kyle Sebastian, who, what does that say? 2011 Cauliflower Alley Club Future Legend Award participant.
Future Legend Award?
Yeah, I don't really know what that means.
That seems kind of strange, don't you?
Regardless, it should be a good show, June 18th in Powell River.
Okay, folks, well, that was the local wrestling segment. Don't forget, coming up, we've got the always fun, always exciting Top 5.
Smack Talk Radio Live.
You. You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live. Helping you remember what most of us couldn't. Tonight's top five.
All right, welcome back to Smack Talk Radio Live. This is tonight's top five, and seeing as how we're kind of doing a tribute to the Macho Man Randy Savage, tonight's top five is going to be the top five Macho Man Randy Savage moments.
Should be a good one.
All right, let's kick it off with number five, being the recipient of the leg drop heard around the world. This happened at Bash at the Beach in July 1996. Now, I know that this isn't really a glorious Randy Savage moment, but I've included it in this list because of its impact, no pun intended, on the world of professional wrestling. At the infamous Bash at the Beach 1996, Randy Savage was on the receiving end of the leg drop from Hogan that signaled the formation of the NWO and his big heel turn that kind of rocked the world at the time.
And who doesn't like the NWO?
Oh, I love the NWO.
That was the formation of the NWO. I mean, Randy Savage had a part in it?
Yeah.
I'll take it.
That was huge.
Number four, the formation of the Mega Powers. Saturday night's main event, October 3rd, 1987. Savage was wrestling the Honky Tonk Man for the Intercontinental title when the Hart Foundation, consisting of Bret Hart and Anvil Neidhart, of course, interrupted the match, causing Honky to be disqualified. In the resulting beating, Miss Elizabeth ran backstage to grab Hulk Hogan and save her man, resulting in a full face turn for Savage, and ultimately ended up resulting in the formation of the Mega Powers.
And that's when I really remembered Randy Savage. Like, when you ask me about Randy Savage, that's what I remember, is him running back in the day with Hogan doing the Mega Powers thing in the late 80s, so.
It was great. You know what, that is one tag team that I don't think really wrestled long enough, to be honest. I could have used a little more of them.
Well, they went for a full year.
A year? Back then, tag teams were, you know, multiple years.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not today's writing style, it was back then. They could have milked it for all they had back then.
Number three, the match made in heaven, SummerSlam 91, which happened August 26th, 1991. In what was an angle to merely put Savage over more as a babyface, since they were already married in real life, the Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth got married in the center of a ring in a full splendid ceremony complete with flower girls and ring bearers and all the ticker tape parade type stuff ever want.
Absolutely.
And this was definitely the classiest, like, wrestling wedding ceremony to happen. Don't you agree?
You know what? I actually have never seen the footage.
No?
I'll tell you what I have seen. I watched this pay-per-view scrambled back in the day. I've never actually seen the wedding.
You used to do the scramble vision too, eh?
I would, you know, turn it up to channel. I think at the time, a high channel for that time was like 63 or whatever. So I turned it to channel 63 and I watched this pay-per-view scrambled. I distinctly remember. I remember Jake the Snake getting involved and I couldn't really see what was happening. But I do know that this is one of the great storylines of all time. I was a huge fan of the Macho Man versus Jake the Snake Roberts feud that they had.
Very well done,
The whole thing was excellently done, and ultimately resulting in one of the best, you know, some of the best footage that the WWE has with the Elizabeth Macho Man wedding.
Yeah, and they've used that footage over and over again, so.
Yeah. Number two, The Clinic with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, WrestleMania 3, March 29th, 1987. Now, this classic bout for the IC title was the culmination of a long feud between the two men and featured intense athleticism, excellent spot planning, and a boatload of near finishes. After getting help from George Steele, Ricky Steamboat pinned Savage, ending his 14-month reign as champion. This match later on received Match of the Year honors from both Pro Wrestling Illustrated and The Wrestling Observer.
And I think, you know, to this day, this still stands as one of the WWE's greatest matches of all time.
The finish was great.
The whole match was great. They choreographed the crap out of this match, which is something that was very rarely done back in those days.
It was good to see, though.
But it made for an incredible match. All the near finishes and, close pinfalls, it was great. And people still talk about this match, you know, to this day. And that brings us to our number one.
He thought he could end it quick. Maybe that's what he has to do. He may not have enough in him. DiBiase going for the sleeper hold.
There it is. He's got it on. But right near the ropes is the Macho Man. Oh, look out. Here comes the Hulkster.
Oh.
Oh, and he clobbered him in. Dollar Man. Down he went. The referee did not see it.
That's terrible, Monsoon. I can't believe Hogan would stoop to that level.
DiBiase is out cold. Savage looking around, doesn't know. Now he's going to the outside.
I cannot believe Hogan would stoop to that level.
The flying elbow. Hooks the leg. It's over. We have a new champion. It's Bedlam here. It's pandemonium.
A taken victory, though, Monsoon.
Yes, winning the 14-man WWE title tournament at WrestleMania 4. That's our number one spot on this, on the top five this week.
How great was that?
That was beautiful. This happened WrestleMania 4, March 27th, 1988. In what can arguably be considered the peak of his career, the Macho Man outlasted such opponents as Butch Reed, Greg Valentine, and the One Man Gang, and then defeated Ted DiBiase, with a little help from Hogan, in the finals of the tournament to win the WWE title, one which he would hold on to for an entire year, all the way up to the next WrestleMania.
Wow. You don't see tournaments like that.
You don't see title reigns like that.
No, anymore, you don't. Know? Well, we might see one this year with Cena.
Yeah, well, I mean, that'll only be... I guess that's 12 months.
What if he goes on to beat The Rock and continues to hold on to it for 10 years after?
Well, then he's got 7 more years to beat Bruno Sammartino then, doesn't he?
Folks, that is tonight's top five. A really good one. You know, paying tribute to the late Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yep.
This brings us to our poll question results. Our poll question from earlier tonight. Now that he's passed away, do you think the WWE will induct the Macho Man into the Hall of Fame?
Looking at the results, an overwhelming 84% of you say yes, the WWE will induct Randy Savage rightfully into the Hall of Fame, which I think, I think it's well deserved.
I think so too. You can't deny what he's done for the WWE, his skill, his charisma, everything about it. It's a complete package. Again, the only thing I question is his relationship that he had with Vince McMahon. Why did we never see Randy Savage back in the WWE? There has to be a reason for it.
Well, here's the thing about Macho Man is that he's one of those guys that you could go to somebody, to the casual person, and you go, do you know who the Macho Man Randy Savage is? And they'll say yes. Yeah. He got to that stage in his career where he had, he's up there with Hogan, and he was on the Tonight Show. I mean, he was.
Oh, he had that celebrity status for sure.
Oh, he had. Yeah, it's very rare. You don't see very many wrestlers get that nowadays, and it's an absolute shame. Why did that?
Rest in peace, Macho Man Randy Savage. Before we let you go, I want to quickly run down this Sunday, WWE Over the Limit. James, I want your quick predictions. Number one, Rey Mysterio versus R-Truth.
I'm going with R-Truth.
Jerry Lawler versus Michael Cole, Kiss My Foot match.
Jerry Lawler.
I'm agreeing with you on both so far. This is a recently announced match, Sin Cara versus Chavo Guerrero.
Sin Cara.
Divas champion, Brie Bella versus Kelly Kelly.
Don't care.
Kelly Kelly on this one. Intercontinental Champion Wade Barrett versus Ezekiel Jackson.
Wade Barrett, probably with some interference.
WWE Tag Team Champions Big Show and Kane versus CM Punk and Mason Ryan.
As much as I'd like to see Show and Kane win it, I'm almost betting that it's going to be Punk and Mason Ryan.
This is the beginning of the push for Mason Ryan.
Yeah.
WWE Champion John Cena versus The Miz in an I Quit match.
Oh, come on now.
And finally, the one match we haven't got to talk about, really. The World Heavyweight Champion, Randy Orton versus Christian.
You know what? This is the match that I am looking forward to the most on the card. I think it's going to be an excellent technical showcase between these two guys. And I think I'm going to have to give it to Randy Orton, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, I can't see them moving the strap that much in that short period of time.
I'm going to go with Christian on this one.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I have a hard time believing that they're just going to strip him off the title a day after he wins it, or 2 days after he wins it, and then they're going to make him lose again. Yeah. That's just burying him.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that we're going for...
Full coat. Next week, when we broadcast Smack Talk Radio Live, thanks for tuning in. Like I said, we'll see you next week.